Today is Sunday, August 10th, 2008. I'm the Uncle.
And I am Charlie. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today.
Well, Charlie, it's been about a week and a half since the San Diego Comic-Con 2008 has ended. And I think, first off, we should really talk about some of the things we talked about in the last podcast that may have been inaccurate information.
All right, go for it.
Number one, of course, firstly, I said I was not going to the San Diego Comic-Con, which was true at the time. I actually, in fact, at the very last minute, decided it would be a good idea to attend. So I went to the San Diego Comic-Con 2008.
This is true, listeners. In under 24 hours, the uncle managed to secure a plane ticket under great duress and with much hand-holding, and also, through the gray market channels known as Craigslist, managed to secure what was, at that point, an entirely sold-out pass to attend the show.
And I'd just like to give our listeners, if you ever even consider going to Comic-Con, just helpful hints. I think maybe throughout the show we'll pipe up with some helpful hints. Helpful hint number one, buy a ticket in advance.
That's a good hint.
That would be hint number one for anyone thinking about going, because I certainly got my ticket, but it was substantially more than the regular retail value of the item.
So yeah, we're talking over 100% more, correct?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit more than 100% markup that I actually spent in order to get a ticket to the event. But it was well worth it, seeing as how it was almost impossible to get these things.
Unless you bought one before the day before the event.
Right, of course. Also, it's probably a good idea to actually plan this vacation and not just decide 48 hours prior that you really want to go and just kind of wing it.
But it all worked out. I mean, the plane ticket you got cost about what we got planning, months in advance. So I guess you can throw caution to the wind for the most part.
Well, not really. Helpful hint number two is fly direct.
Oh, yes.
I did not fly direct, and it took me close to 20 hours to go from JFK International Airport in New York to LAX International Airport due to various delays and flight problems and things of that nature. So, just fly direct.
Yeah, and that wasn't part of the ticket. That was, a series of mistakes, like you say, a series of unforeseen problems.
Absolutely, but Charlie, you have to realize whenever you open yourself up to the possibility of connections, the chances of failure dramatically increase once you have one to two layovers or anything more than that.
Oh,
so if you're going to go, take my advice and just get a direct flight.
You've learned so much, Uncle.
I really have. It's been a great learning experience. I would say mistake number three from the last Uncle Cast is on you, Charlie. Charlie, of course, we talked about the Brickmaster promotion, wherein if you're a member of the Brickmaster Club and bring a copy of the magazine to the Lego booth at San Diego Comic-Con, you get an exclusive gift.
Ah, yeah.
Charlie, of course, did not do this, so the exclusive Brickmaster gift was not obtained by neither myself or him.
Now, I have an interesting follow-up to that correction, Uncle, if I may. So I went to the Lego booth on the first day and told them of my plight and how I'm an idiot, and they took some amount of pity on me, but they merely said to come back later in the show. I came back a few days later and again explained my plight to a totally different person, how, oh yeah, I'm a member of the press, blah, 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 I forgot my Brickmaster magazine because I'm an idiot, what was the special thing? I'm just kind of curious what I missed out on, and, maybe if you got any spares, if you can hook me up. Because when I went on the first day, they said, yeah, nobody's been stopping by. We've got like one Brickmaster who came by so far. That's it. And then the guy pointed next to me. He's like, go talk to that guy over there. He's running the Brickmaster promotion. So I go talk to the guy, and I tell him what's up. He's like, oh, yeah, whatever. The special gift is just to put your name in like a hat, and then they'll draw your name out of a hat for these special Bionicle posters, like original Bionicle art, I guess, that's hanging in their office, and like maybe you get to win some Bionicle art. And I found out then that the guy who was running the promotion was like the guy who created and drew all the Bionicle stuff, which was kind of ridiculous too, so I went back and got his autograph because that's what he was doing sitting at the table. But so it turns out, Uncle, that it seems, unless it was a total snow job at that point in the con a couple days into it, that the Brickmaster special was hardly a special at all. It was merely entering yourself into a contest, which was kind of weak, though it was entirely stupid on my part to, forget my magazine, which was that kind of sucked. But I guess
an exclusive set would be much cooler than just a raffle, I have to say, original Bionicle artwork, I think that's a a pretty cool thing to raffle, because that's really one of a kind. You just
that
can't
would
go
be,
out and buy that.
And they did let me put my name on the list anyway, because Bionicle Dude was like, sure, whatever, just write it on this post-it note, and there you go. So who knows? I think I don't know when the raffle is. I kind of forget. Maybe it's happened, maybe it hasn't. I haven't heard, so I'm guessing I'm not going to win. But yeah, so that's the follow-up to that mistake number 3 or 4 or whatever we were.
Oh, okay. All right, awesome. Another mistake that I noticed with the UncleCast, both you and I were talking at great length about the San Diego Comic-Con exclusives. In particular, Hasbro's and Mattel's San Diego Comic-Con exclusives.
Oh, indeed, indeed.
And, of course, we both operated under the assumption, which I believe was true at the time, that these would remain exclusive to the San Diego Comic-Con.
As the name would imply.
Right, because something is exclusive only if you exclude other people from buying it. And as of press time that we're airing this UncleCast, I believe all of the Hasbro quote-unquote exclusives are available, with the exception of is it the blue-suited Cobra Commander?
The blue-suit, here, there's a couple. The blue-suited Cobra Commander, and I believe the Iron Man Mighty Mug was the other kind of in-demand one. That one sold out at the show, and it is sold out at HasbroToyShop.com. I believe the My Little Pony 25th anniversary, or whatever it was, is still available on HasbroToyShop.com. It did sell out at the show, which was the only other thing that sold out. It also may be sold out now at the website, but your point, Uncle, is very valid and very angering.
And if anyone's interested, also Mattel's exclusives, with the exception of King Grayskull, who sold out, are still available. That you can still buy those as well.
Lest we make further errors. I believe Lobo is now finally sold out as well, so maybe he will start to be given some respect as well.
Oh, okay. And of course, I guess the still available ones are the Giganta 2-pack with the 3 3/4 Giganta and the 8-inch Giganta from the Justice League Unlimited line.
Right.
I think there's also the Lightning McQueen diorama box thing.
The Lightning one sold out immediately as well. So the Giganta, sadly, Giganta's the only one who's left.
Oh, okay.
But so, they had fewer exclusives, so there was less, love to go around. But certainly, as you said, both Hasbro and Mattel kind of pulled the rug out from under us with this whole exclusives game and made me feel like kind of a chump for standing in these absurd lines for hours on end at the show. Instead of going to panels or, wandering the show and getting some cool pictures, I stood in line at Hasbro for 2 hours. The only saving grace of standing in this stupid line is that I got the blue-suited Cobra Commander, which has turned out to be the extremely limited piece and was really the one to get. But, in large part, kind of a huge waste of time, especially having to ship the Nemesis Primes, the Titanium Skywarps, the Combat Hero Snake Eyes and Timber. All that stuff is available right now for no markup on Hasbro Toy Shop, and would have been a lot cheaper to just get them to ship it to me instead of the Show FedEx, which, mistake number 5, perhaps. While the Show FedEx is very convenient, and I probably would use it again in a pinch, they do charge a lot of money. There's a premium on the box. I think there's like other hidden premiums. It's like $10 a box premium just right on the top, along with any other premiums they decide to charge. So it's an easy way to get your stuff out, but it does take longer. It took like a week longer to get it because I think they just sit on all the packages till the show's over. And it was hugely expensive. So if you have any ability to do so, it's worth walking down the street and finding like another Kinko's and just shipping from there. So while it's convenient to ship, especially because, the uncle and I have to travel a great distance to go to the show, so obviously, especially given airline regulations these days, it's impossible to bring things with you on the airline, either stowed or carry-on. So you really have to ship if you buy anything, but there are smarter ways to ship, so.
The next helpful hint that I'm going to say is one that, because I lost track of the actual numbering system that we're using, is that when you do initially fly out, if you are flying out, what you want to do is pack your suitcase inside of a bigger suitcase.
Ah, yes.
So this way you actually have a completely empty suitcase that you can fill up with all sorts of different loot and stuff that you buy. And instead of having to ship it, you just pay the airlines an extra $15 or whatever that second bag charge is now up to, which is actually going to be less than if you shipped it yourself.
This is very true, yeah.
So if you're going to a con, or you're just, going to Japan, or a place where you know you're going to buy a lot of stuff, pack your real suitcase and then a bigger suitcase around it, basically. So you end up with 2 suitcases, and you can fill that up with all sorts of stuff. And you don't have to worry about dealing with, like, oh, we got to find a Kinko's, we got to find someone with a car, I have to lug this stuff all over the place. Which really brings me up to the next hint. The ideal thing that you should do if you want exclusives is, number one, determine whether or not they are exclusives. And if they're not, just wait until the day after the show and order them off the goddamn website. So you don't have to stand in line for hours at a time and then find out after the fact, oh, it's actually on our website, like I did with Lobo and King Grayskull, who are both now sold out. But that Monday, you know, I just went to check out Matty Toy Collector, and they were both up. And that was kind of a little bit frustrating.
Yes. Now, fortunately, I will point out that neither you nor I stood in the Mattel line, so that was at least a saving grace.
Absolutely. Both of us used various shenanigans and...
subterfuge and whatnot. And,
yeah, so we did not have to, but the first couple of days, that Mattel line, people stood in line for... One of my contacts, Andrus, his name is, told me he stood in line for basically 2.5 hours, two and a half hours.
Yeah.
And again, that was on the preview night. Wednesday preview night was complete mayhem, which brings me up to another inaccuracy of ours. We both went into this under the false assumption that Wednesday preview night would really not be that bad. And, you know, it would be a great time to just kind of get our feel of the dealer room and hang out and have things be kind of more relaxed and less ridiculous, which, of course, was the opposite of the truth.
Yeah.
That Wednesday preview night was absurd. I am so amazed and happy that no one got, like, hurt in a stampede, because the amount of people that were there on Wednesday was crazy.
It really was just a surprise. You know, it's something to take into account for next year. I still feel like maybe that's still maybe the best chance if you get in early somehow. I don't know. I really haven't figured out how to play it for next time, Uncle, because it feels like everybody's gone a couple of years now. And probably everybody found, oh, preview night's less busy, and so 100,000 people decided that preview night was less busy, so now they all go to preview night, therefore preview night is not less busy, so who knows? Like, who knows what the answer is?
Yeah, no, it's just, I don't know. And again, this is another thing that I really kind of want to talk about. In terms of the scope of this convention, both Charlie and I previously this year attended the New York Comic Con as well as Toy Fair. And I would say if you added all of the attendees to the New York Comic Con and Toy Fair and then multiplied that by two, you'd have probably the amount of individuals that were here at the San Diego Comic Con. The scope of this thing is like, I have never seen this many people in my entire life.
It was amazing. I mean, standing in line to get the tickets on preview night and seeing this line just go off into the distance, into like this vanishing point down along the harbor, was just kind of an indication of what lay in store in terms of attendance and having to deal with so many people.
Yeah. And again, just in terms of the more popular panels, there were, I wish I had a copy of it, but the local San Diego newspaper had an interview and a picture of some dude that slept outside all night on the concrete in a sleeping bag.
Awesome.
Because he wanted to be first in line, you know, and have a good spot at one of the panels.
Yeah.
So these are the kind of diehards that you're dealing with. So when you go into a situation like this, it's all different, what's it called? It's different things to consider when you're saying to yourself, is this something I really want to do? Now, in order to switch gears just a little bit, it sounds like this is a huge warning against the San Diego Comic-Con, but it's not. I'm sure you did as well, Charlie, but I had an awesome time.
Oh, absolutely.
I really did have a lot of fun at the San Diego Comic-Con.
And I feel kind of bad, because like you're saying, I've got a lot of, I guess, complaints about it, but it's more like they were kind of surprises, they were things that we had to learn, because it was the first time we'd gone, and so
absolutely.
I always try to temper it by saying, okay, there's all this stuff that I'm complaining about, but really it's just trying to think of how to do it better next year, and overall, there was so much to do. My biggest, you know, complaint with it was that there was so much great stuff, I just have to really pick and choose, and it's just too bad you can't do everything, but you've got to just hit your highlights. But, you know, what a great problem to have, that there's so much cool stuff, you've just got to do a subset of the cool stuff, and it was a great time.
Absolutely. I mean, if you can't find anything in terms of paneling that interests you at the San Diego Comic-Con, you have no business going to the Paragame Preserve or even calling yourself a geek or a nerd in general. Anything you could ever possibly want or be interested in, they had a panel on. I mean, just the range of guests and the classes of them, it was just mind-blowing. I mean, on Thursday, I saw a panel with Robert Rodriguez and, what's her name, the one, Cherry Darling from Rose McGowan.
Yeah.
I saw a panel with the two of them, and it was just so cool. I saw a panel with J. Michael Straczynski, who, of course, the creator of Paragame Preserve favorites Babylon 5 and Captain Power.
Absolutely.
and of course a writer on the Ghostbusters animated cartoon series, which we're both huge fans of, and of course he's written...
the amazing depth and breadth of the panels is really something, and of course it covers almost every aspect of pop culture. It's hilarious, and this is kind of a good opportunity to point it out, how it's called a Comic-Con, but, you know, comics were almost second fiddle to everything else, especially the big part of the dealer room that was devoted to comics was, I'd say, almost 100% of the time was less busy than, say, the insane area around the Hasbro, Mattel, like, booths and whatnot that, of course, I think was exacerbated by their ridiculous lines. Maybe at times during the show the comic area got some more love. I wasn't, you know, personally, I was part of the problem. I wasn't over there very much. But a lot of the panels, you know, it covered everything from, like, Doctor Who and Torchwood and Family Guy, and then also some stuff, of course, that was comics-related, like IDW. And, Uncle, one of the favorite panels that I got to attend was actually the IDW panel with Joe Hill, who is a fellow I've been reading his new Lock and Key series. And he's kind of an up-and-coming horror writer and also happens to be Stephen King's son. And he's written a great comic and did a little panel on it, and I got to go chat with him very briefly afterwards. And there's a fun picture up on the preserve of him and Gabriel Rodriguez, who's the artist on the bit. Interestingly, they'd never met before, which I think is cool. It was a totally kind of online collaboration doing this comic, and they were really excited to meet each other, and they were having a great time. Joe Hill seems like a pretty cool dude. He's got a website, joehillfiction.com, that I'll put in the show notes. It's a great blog that he runs. And so he was really cool to meet and to hear that Lock and Key's been extended for 2 more years. Another kind of crazy thing that came out of a panel was going to the Hasbro Star Wars panel, and they had this kind of middle-aged dude with a big gray beard up there at the table who was the sculptor of the new Millennium Falcon, the gigantic Millennium Falcon that everybody loves. And it turns out that this dude was the guy who sculpted the original Millennium Falcon back in, like, 1980, and he's just been hanging out on staff, you know, I guess with Kenner and now with Hasbro. And 30 years later, they're like, hey, dude, you want to do another Millennium Falcon? Oh, this is great. And he was so excited showing his little PowerPoint slides and saying, I finally got to do it the way I've always wanted to. So that was definitely a cool panel to see also. But what are some of your highlights there, Uncle?
Well, just to talk about what you said, I'm actually looking forward to read Lock and Key. Is that it? The Joe Hill comic book?
Yeah.
But, of course, I'm going to wait for the trade to come out. So, you know, just based on the strength of your recommendation, you say it's such an awesome comic. So whenever that first trade paperback comes out, I'm looking forward to buy that. And just in terms of the Falcon, which, of course, is the Millennium Falcon that you can buy in toy stores now for the bargain basement price of $150.
Absolutely.
It really is just, oh, man. And, again, you know, it's well-documented, my hatred of the Star Wars franchise, but what an amazing toy. And even cooler that they got the same dude that did the original one.
Yeah, yeah. And then he got to just kind of live out his fantasy of adding lights and an escape pod, and, you know, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, and but in terms of other panels that I went to that were really awesome, both me and friend of the Parry Game Preserve, The Chase, went to the Mythbusters panel.
Oh, right.
Awesome, which, of course, had both, you know, Adam Savage and Jamie Hyman, the Mythbusters. And that was just an awesome, awesome panel. They showed behind-the-scenes videos, and, you know, they basically told jokes, and they really had the entire audience in the palm of their hands, and everyone was really laughing and having a great time.
Nice.
And they showed a teaser for the new season opener of Mythbusters, where they take on the myth, basically, can the moon landing be faked?
Uh-huh.
So that really looks excited, and I'm very, you know, very hotly anticipating watching the season premiere of Mythbusters on A&E.
Did they weigh in with their opinion on that topic?
Well, someone asked, and they said, oh, you have to watch the show.
So they
were kind of mum on it, you know, pretty intelligent to plug the show.
Sure.
But if I had to guess, I would imagine that both of them think it was not faked.
Think so? Okay. All right.
But again, that's just my conjecture based upon the type of people I think both Adam and Jamie are.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that was really cool. I had fun at the Gears of War 2 panel. There was a Gears of War 2 panel that I just, you know, found myself in because, you know, I wanted to stay in the room to get a good seat for the Mythbusters.
Oh, and that turned out to be all right, huh?
Yeah, and an interesting confluence of events. The main character, the voice actor that voices the main character, who's like this really kind of badass, you know, action hero type, is actually the same guy that does the voice of Bender from Futurama.
Oh, no kidding. All right.
So, yeah, so like this dude, they just brought him up on stage, and I was like, who the hell is that? And he starts doing the Bender voice, and I was like, oh, that, you know, they're bringing up Bender. That's weird. And then he did the voice of, you know, the main character from Gears of War, and I was like, wow, it's the same dude.
That's pretty cool.
And I thought it was pretty cool because, you know, he talked a little bit and he actually said, oh, you know, like about how much he loved playing Gears of War and like what a great game it was and how happy he was to be a part of it. And he said, but, you know, I can't beat it on Expert. I'm up to Ram on Expert, but I can't beat Ram. And Ram, of course, is the last boss who is a real pain in the ass. But I beat him, but not on Expert. I only beat him on Normal.
There you go. So, yeah, I imagine I would not get to him even on Easy.
No. He's a real challenge, but he's a lot of fun to play against.
Nice. Well, how fortuitous that that panel turned out to be good. And also, you and Chase went to the Mystery Science Theater 3000 panel, I believe?
The Chase made it to the MST3K panel. I unfortunately did not.
That's right. Okay, you did not make it there. Okay.
No, I probably should have gone, but I just took one look at the line and I said, there's no way that I'm making it in. But what I was starting to hear, and I actually read this on message boards, that people were getting upset, especially at the really, really, really popular panels, I never saw a panel where every seat was taken.
True,
did
yeah.
Did you notice that as well?
Yeah.
It always seemed to me like they kept 50 to 75 seats open, and especially when there's people standing outside that can't get in. That kind of put a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know why they didn't fill them up completely.
Yeah, I don't understand what was going on there. Helen saw that, too. Even in the really big ballroom C or whatever it was, when they had a line outside, there were just seats all over. So it's odd.
Another helpful hint that I would just like to throw out there, portable gaming systems like the Nintendo DS and the PlayStation PSP, the PlayStation Portable are your friend. Because if you go to panels, there's going to be a lot of downtime. There's going to be a lot of sitting around. There's going to be a lot of staring at your shoes. So if you want to bring an MP3 player like an iPod or something or a DS, just something to keep yourself busy when you're waiting in between panels and standing around in the hallway, because that gets boring very fast.
That is a very good suggestion. And really, it does highlight the whole having to decide what exactly you're going to do. You know, will panels be your focus or will visiting the toy companies downstairs and, you know, talking to comic book artists be your focus? Because I really don't think you can do both. You know, I tried to do both, and as a result, I did each one kind of poorly. But you've really got to make that commitment to sit in line for 2 hours, and then once you get into a room, you know, you sit there with your stadium buddy and just don't leave for 8 hours.
Yeah. But again, Charlie, really, I think we're dancing around it, but another helpful hint that I would like to say is plan out your day accordingly.
Oh, yeah.
Really spend some time and look at the schedule and figure out the times and figure out the things you want to do the most and then try and go from there. So you target the main things that you really must go to, and then you try and fill in the day accordingly.
Yep.
But if you don't plan, you will get overwhelmed, and you will just kind of walk around in a daze, and you might actually miss some stuff that you might like to do.
Another tip, of course, bring some food. Bring some food and water and like a backpack, you know, because if you're sitting in that room all day, you're gonna start fading if you don't plan ahead for that, too.
Absolutely. Granola bars, power bars, a couple of waters. And again, bring a backpack. Bring something to carry your stuff in, because the amount of stuff that they hand you and the amount of stuff that you can buy, it just helps out when you have some kind of courier bag or a backpack. But bring something that you can bring all this stuff in, because that's really going to come in handy.
Now, granted, they give away bags at the show, and there was totally a pecking order of bags. Like, you'd see people with the really cool bags, like the Wonder Woman bags that they now have that were slung around your shoulders and actually hung to keep both your hands free. You know, those bags were super cool. And, you know, since I didn't know anything about anything, I didn't even know where these bags were coming from. But, you know, everybody seemed to have them. And now I think those stupid bags are even going on eBay for $10 to $15, which is hilarious. The free show bags. So, you know, if you look around the show, you, of course, and Dark Horse has their omnipresent big yellow plastic bags, but those, I guess, aren't as cool because they require a hand, so you're then, you know, hobbled. You have one less hand to use. But, yeah, there's certainly bags all over the show to get a hold of, but bringing a backpack is just a good way to start because, I mean, you're going to need all the help you can get, and you got to put your sandwich somewhere.
And, of course, another added bonus of bringing in something to eat and some drinks is you will not get clobbered with the con prices of food.
There
you know,
we go.
You won't have to spend like $5 on a water and like $7 on a hot dog.
Yeah. The $11 pizzas or whatever they were.
Yeah, and I actually found an awesome deli a couple of blocks away from the convention center when I decided to walk from where the bus stop dropped us. I'll take a walk. And it made these monster sandwiches, and it was very reasonably priced. And it also had beer and alcohol in the deli, which I'm really not used to. But, you know, I didn't imbibe or really drink or do any of that stuff because it's so physical and there's so much walking around. And at no point do you really kind of want to tap out and blow all your energy in one shot.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, it's really, it just, if you want, this thing goes all day. It goes from like 9 in the morning till late at night, because there's programming going on and movies and whatnot. Now, this reminds me of something else, which is the much fabled Hall H, which just seemed like a hugely bad idea. And the buzz is that, you know, Hall H is where they premiere movies and where they do their really big events, and it's some gigantic hall, like 10,000 seats or something, or maybe more, maybe less, I don't know. But it's hugely difficult to actually get into. And people will wait, you know, overnight just for Hall H. And so really, you either go to Hall H or you do the rest of the show. And that just seems kind of ridiculous to me. But so we saw nothing in Hall H, of course.
Oh, no, that I, of course, did not even enter Hall H once during all 4 days of the San Diego Comic-Con. But just to give the listeners kind of an idea of what we're talking about, that's where the Watchmen panel was, with, like, the director and the writer and, like, I don't know, most of the cast. I believe Hall H was where the Heroes panel was, who had, like, every single person from Heroes, where
right,
they showed the opening, the entire new opening episode of Heroes that I believe premieres September 22nd.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so, like, that's really where the marquee panels are. But unfortunately, in order to get into Hall H, the, what would you call it, the barriers to entry?
Yeah.
Are pretty high, especially when there's so much other stuff going on that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, again, I guess for some people that's what they want their show experience to be, and that's okay. But there is a lot to do, and I would hate to trade it, you know, trade everything else just for that one kind of set of experiences. But hey, you know, that's like we said, the great thing about the show, there's so many options. Everybody can carve out their own niche.
And that's really, you know, that's just the strength of the con, that they were able to just get so much programming and so many panels and just so many different things to do. I mean, really, you know, there's something for everyone.
Absolutely. So, hey, Uncle, what do you say we hit up an intermission and come right back?
Sounds good.
To me, it look like a leprechaun to me. All you gotta do is look up in the tree. Who else in the leprechaun say yeah?
Yeah!
Yeah!
I wanna know where to go.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through our fantastic intermission. So, Uncle, I know a topic we haven't touched on yet is accommodations. And this is, of course, a hot-button issue for anybody who doesn't happen to live in San Diego, which I suspect is a vanishingly small percentage of the attendee base, given how big it is. And, we learned a few things about that, did we not?
Oh, absolutely. Just when it comes to accommodations, the closer you are to the actual convention center, the better. So while you may be able to get deals at places that are further away, it's going to affect you in other ways, meaning you're going to have to deal with cabs or buses and the costs associated with that. If you buy a lot of stuff at the show, you're going to have to drag it all over, you know, the place, and you're going to have to somehow try to get it back to your room safe and sound. If you don't feel like using the con FedEx, which is going to, you know, they're going to kill you with the prices if you do that. So the closer you can get to the convention center, the better when you're choosing a hotel. And I actually said to myself, okay, for 2009, I'm going to do it right. I called them up and I said, look, I want to put a reservation down now. And they said, oh, something like, you can only reserve it, I don't know, like 350 days in advance.
Now, so, and you called them up basically while we were there at the show. So we were trying to take care of this, you know, a year in advance, right?
Absolutely, a year in advance. And so our good friend, The Chase, I had him set up a reminder, and it sent me an email. Basically, on August 6th, stating to call them up and say, hey, look, you know, I want to book the room. I called them, in all honesty, either the 7th or the 8th, and I said, hey, I'd like to book a room. And the reservations agent told me that every single room in the hotel was booked. And this blew my mind because I was calling nearly a full year in advance, and every single room was booked in the hotel center. And I really should have laid into the guy answering the phone because he really was not helpful at all. But I didn't. It took every fiber of my being to not just curse and scream at him because I was so incredulous that every single room was booked ahead of time when it only opened up 2 days prior. But Charlie, why don't you tell us about the information that you got?
Yeah, well, you were so angry, Uncle. It was hilarious because the uncle called me at work, everybody, and he was just like, you could just see the smoke coming out of his ears.
I was
just over
so
the
furious, Charlie. I was so angry because, you know, I was like, I'm going to do it right. You know, we're going to get a closer hotel. You know, it's going to make life so much easier. And I call him and it's like, oh, sorry, we're all sold out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know what, I'm not going. I was so furious. I just wanted to right then and there say, you know what, I'm done.
I'm
finished. Like, now, Comic-Con.
And now the hotel that the uncle called was the Marriott. That's like the show hotel, I guess. It's attached to the convention center. You know, it's right there. Probably the most expensive one in the city, but you know, whatever. It's right there, and it was all booked up. So they told him. During the show, at one point we had a little downtime and we're kind of tired. So Helen and I walked across the street and had a nice lunch in the restaurant in the bottom of the Hilton. And Hilton looked really glorious. The restaurant was beautiful. The menu was really fancy and tasty and not terribly expensive. And so I called up the Hilton thinking, all right, well, so the uncle struck out at the Marriott. Let's see what's going on at the Hilton. And I heard the same thing. I gave the dates. I said, and the person actually sounded kind of surprised, which was funny. But they're like, there's a problem, sir. All those rooms are gone. I said, well, you know, I can't say I'm surprised, but, you know, have you really, like, and I pushed them a little. I was like, so really in the last, like, day, you've really just sold all these rooms? Like, have you been booking these up all day long? And she said, well, there's this group called Travel Planners. And Travel Planners basically books the entire city of San Diego. And then they resell the rooms later at some sort of through the convention. So that is apparently, and I'm guessing the same thing happened with the Marriott, why we will find that every hotel we call within a reasonable walking distance of the convention will have no rooms. This organization apparently buys them all. Now, I think this could be good. It could be bad. I think it's you know, BS that you can't make your own reservations, and it's absurd that some group can simply book up all the hotel rooms a year in advance, but that just shows how big this event is. The thing that might be good about it, in theory, since they work, I believe, with the convention, supposedly through them is how you get the convention rate, so you supposedly get a discount. I called them up and I said, hey, you know, what's the deal? And the person I talked to was, you know, low man on the totem pole. He didn't really know anything. And he kept, finally, I said, I want to get a room for this event that's next year. And he just said, oh, it's not on my, my screen here. It's not on my computer. I don't know how to call it up. So according to him, and I need to call
him. So this guy was not a customer service superstar.
Very well put. Yeah, he just had no idea what was going on. And, you know, if it wasn't on his screen, he didn't know it. And so through him, I was unable to get any information. But he claimed that they had not gone up for reservation yet, which means this group has simply booked up, like, you know, 10,000 rooms and is now just sitting on them for some number of months till they deem it, you know, time to start reserving these rooms for people. Which means whenever that happens, I'm sure there's a mad dash through the website or whatever means they allow through the phone to actually reserve their pile of rooms, because I doubt they have 125,000 rooms, but that's how many people try to go to the show. So still there's you know, going to be more demand than there is supply, even through these travel planners jokers. But somehow figuring out when those rooms go live, possibly that is a way to get a better rate. It's just kind of frustrating that you have to go through these guys because they kind of corner the market and make an artificial demand, you know, even though maybe you can get a better rate, but also maybe you don't get a room because everybody calls up first. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, and again, my whole thing with next year was just wanting to do it in advance and not having to worry about it, and just being having the psychological edge of just knowing that, you know, I have the room, I'm ready to go, I just have to wait till July of 2009, as it were. But now it's like you can't do that. You have to wait until you have to go to the site every day, you know, right around the time, and then hopefully you get lucky and you just see when the announcement goes up and you call. And then you talk to someone who knows what they're doing, and you're not left on hold for 2 hours, and, you know, they put your credit card down, and it goes through, and you finally have one. And, like, I just want to call it, I want it done, you know, and, like, now I'm not going to be able to do that, because this travel planners, or this travel, whatever it's called, you know, basically has a monopoly on every hotel. They buy up every single room and then resell it.
And I'll just remind you of a great scenario that you painted for me was if we had been able to reserve the room, you know, fast forward to a year from now when the uncle's sitting in his living room of his new apartment that he's going to get, you know, sipping a beer, and all of a sudden does a double take and realizes what day of the year it is, and that he's now, you know, already squandered 2 out of his 5 days of a hotel reservation by failing to attend Comic-Con. But, well, let's just hope that wouldn't play out that way.
Right, right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, there's always that risk when you deal with the uncle. I'm a man of many mysteries and curious habits, as it were. But I had even figured to myself that, you know, even if I got a reservation and ultimately decided that I didn't want to go, I certainly saw people selling their reservations, their hotel reservations, on eBay.
That's right.
So you can always, you know, it's like once you have it, you can always cash it out. Same thing with the badge, with the membership badge. People were selling their badges on Craigslist and eBay, and, you know, I bought my badge from someone who sold me theirs, and, you know, there's like a whole, I guess, reseller's market. And of course, this is all expressly forbidden from the company that runs San Diego Comic-Con, but it goes on all the time anyway, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It just is what it is. But again, you know, back to that helpful hint, plan this stuff in advance. Plan it as far in advance as possible. And then if you don't end up going, you can always cancel your airfare and have them rebook it. And maybe even sell your badge and your hotel room for a profit. So.
Yeah. And an interesting, you know, another thing about planning in advance, I'm pretty sure that we actually somehow, amazingly, were way ahead of the game for a change and tried to reserve hotels in February or March of this year, you know, many months before the show. And found that at that point, all the ones in the city were already spoken for. And, you know, that's one of the reasons we ended up staying where we did, which was about 4 miles away from the show around the harbor. Because, you know, we found a room out there that was available, you know, which came with its own learning curve. And I think by the end of the show, we'd kind of figured out some good ways to do stuff. But it did necessitate having a car in some ways. If we didn't have a car, we would have had to pay a lot for transportation. So, it's we're starting early this year, and we'll just kind of see how the hustle flows. But I think we have a little better idea. And so anybody who's listening hopefully can at least somehow benefit from our kind of reconnaissance that went down this year, and maybe pick up a few of these tricks without stepping in the same pitfalls that we had to.
Absolutely. And that's really, you know, what I view the almost the theme of today's UncleCast is just, you know, this is our experience. This was the things that, like, When we end up going next year, we're going to try and do differently. Like, listen to our podcast and learn from what we did, maybe not wrong, but could have done better, and then this way you won't fall into the same pitfalls.
Exactly. I mean, we would have loved to have this information ourselves, so here you go.
Yeah, but, you know, that's... And in terms of anything else, what did we do right? Well, for one thing...
Short list.
When we saw the cast of MST3K and we booked those tickets in advance, I think we did that right, because I'm pretty sure that was sold out, Charlie.
Yeah, the live riff tracks that we saw.
Yeah, the live riff tracks, which
that was a real highlight for me. That was a great time. Actually going and seeing good old Mike Nelson and Kevin Murphy and Corbett doing the Plan 9 from Outer Space. Basically Misty live on stage. And so that was Mike with the guys who voiced Tom Servo and Crow from the show under his, you know, ownership of the show there when he was in the command chair. And it was really cool just to see a live performance of it. And it was really funny. So yeah, it was a good time. And I think we did that right. And that was one of my highlights, really.
Yeah, mine as well. I'm really glad we did that. Plan 9 from Outer Space is one of my favorite, you know, movies, because it is just so bizarre and so weird, and it was a real treat to you know, hear them riff on it, and they had some really funny jokes, and they sang a couple of songs at the beginning of the show, which I thought was, you know, really funny, and yeah, it was fun. I'm really glad that we did that.
And you know, this reminds me of something else, because how did we find out about this? Basically, you know, stopped by the Riff Tracks booth. They had a little sign talking about the show, and the person I spoke to kind of, you know, gave me a flyer and said, "Hey, this is happening." You know, I'm pretty sure this was not listed on any of the websites. This wasn't, you know, in the programming guide. And that just highlights the fact that, okay, there's this massive programming guide and all these hundreds of events going on that are part of the convention over these 4 or 5 days for which it runs. But there's also a ton of kind of tertiary stuff that's nearly impossible to find out about. But if you do, it's going to be super cool as well. So there is just such a huge amount of cool stuff that you can possibly do during this span of time. Certainly finding out about it is the true challenge. But if you're willing to put forth the effort and, I don't know, get a little lucky perhaps, it's really astonishing all the cool stuff that can be at your disposal.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that's another helpful tip. It's always keep your eyes open and pay attention, and just kind of, you know, go out and try and seek out those really cool things that you might not even be listed in the programming guide, and just, you know, have fun with it. And because, you know, otherwise you might, if you don't pay attention, you might miss something that's really awesome, and then the next day realize, oh, I should have done this, or oh, they were doing this.
Yeah.
So-and-so was doing a signing, and it was only a limited engagement.
Yeah,
and you really want to avoid that, you know, as much as you can, and just do as much as you can in the time that you have. So just keep your eyes open, and always be friendly and nice, and always be willing to talk to people, really.
Yeah, like, you know, because you could read the program guide and say, oh, okay, there's, you know, a screening of this anime from 8 till 10. I guess I can go to that. Or you can talk to, like, I don't know, the people at Devils Do Comics and find out they're doing an after party somewhere and you're invited. I mean, that's probably going to be a lot more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'd much rather hang out with the people that do Devils Do than, you know, like watch Sailor Moon.
Yeah, exactly. Unless it's perhaps some of the ill-thought-out Sailor Moon costumes that run around the show and really shouldn't, but that's...
Oh, well, I'm talking strictly cartoon Sailor Moon. If it's the live-action Sailor Moon show, you know, with, like, the Japanese models, then I'll, you know, I'd much rather watch that than, you know, go to the Devils Do event.
Well, as long as it's Japanese models and not, you know, the comic store guy dressed up as Sailor Moon.
Right, right. As long as it's Sailor Moon and not Sailor Goon, as it were.
Right, exactly. So, well, now, Uncle, I know we had discussed potentially doing this as a two-parter, so maybe we should wrap this up and then hit up everybody next time with some of the other things that we did right and that we feel were the real highlights of the show.
I think that sounds like a great idea, Charlie.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us today. I hope that you've enjoyed getting a little insight into some of the hard knock school that we went to in order to learn about this event. And maybe you can benefit from this. And we definitely advise that you think about going next year because, hey, why not? It clearly needs more people attending just to make sure there's no room to walk down the hall. So, Uncle, thank you very much for your generous insight into all the things we did wrong.
Oh, thank you, Charlie.
All right, everybody. We'll see you later. Take it easy, Uncle.
Bye. What, Dad? No, Dad. No.